The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Natalie Emanuel, from Game of Thrones and the Fast and Furious franchise to her own feature film, The Invitation. Hey guys, Josh Horowitz here with another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Yes, a new guest to the podcast today. Another very familiar face, though, for you, those of you that have watched Game of Thrones. And I'm guessing that 90% of the listeners of Happy, Sad, Confused, as people of good taste, have watched Game of Thrones. I certainly did. A little late to the party, as people may know. Yes, it took me to the last season to catch up, but I got there, guys. And I'm enjoying House of the Dragon as well. Well, Natalie Emanuel was, of course, a key part of that series. She is now starring in her first feature film front and center. I mean, she's been in many films, of course, no less than the Fast and Furious franchise, as I mentioned, but now she gets to be the lead in her own film. It is The Invitation. It opens in theaters this Friday, and it's kind of a modern retelling, a little bit, of the Dracula vampire story, set in with some contemporary themes. You'll see, I don't want to reveal too much, but if you're a sucker, and I mean that in the least punny way possible, for these kinds of stories, you'll enjoy this one. And Natalie is, of course, an arresting, charismatic performer, and it's great to see her get a shot at the big time, at leading her own film, and she more than lives up to the challenge. So Natalie Emanuel is on the podcast today. We talk about her whole career, her comfort movie, her time on Game of Thrones, the future of the Fast and Furious franchise, and much more. I know you guys will dig it. As always, a lot more is going on in the Josh Horowitz Happy, Sad, Confused universe. I'm gearing up for the Toronto Film Festival, which will be in a few weeks. And prior to that, I'm actually going to be, and I'm very excited about this, at the Telluride Film Festival for the very first time over Labor Day weekend. For those of you that follow the film festival game, as it were, Telluride is kind of one of the kickoff film festivals, along with Venice. And I've always dreamed of going, and it's this is the year. I'm doing it. So I don't think I'm necessarily going to be recording stuff out there. Who knows? If a podcast opportunity pops up, I'll do that. But this is more just to enjoy movies and see people I know and love and respect, and just enjoy the Telluride weather and environs. It's supposed to be beautiful there. So I've heard for years this is, you know, like a film festival lovers festival. So I will report back to you guys. And perhaps I'll even be doing some postings about it, certainly on social media, but also perhaps on the YouTube channel, which, as I've mentioned before, we've recently launched. I'm very excited about it. It's youtube.com/Josh Horowitz. Again, that's youtube.com/Josh Horowitz. Stop what you're doing right now. Give us a subscription. Give us a subscribe over there. Do whatever you have to do. Just hit the like, hit the subscribe button, whatever you do. We're just getting started there. But as you'll see, we're posting tons of really cool old and new content. Stuff from the archives, old Happy, Sad, Confused episodes, old Game Night episodes, but also stuff expressly for the YouTube channel. Natalie's conversation will be there. There's a ton of great stuff. And like I said, I'm looking at it as an opportunity also to record dispatches from different film festivals. I have some exciting plans, certainly at Toronto, to record some fun conversations. And we'll see, like I said, what happens at Telluride. But I'm just psyched for the fall festival season, because that means great movies, the movies that you can really sink your teeth into. And many of them are at or near the top of my list for the most anticipated films of 2022. So excited about that, and a lot of really cool people and filmmakers returning to the fray. You know, everyone from Steven Spielberg has this new personal film called The Fabelmans that's going to be at Toronto. Sam Mendes has a new film. Sarah Polley has a film everybody's talking about called women talking, coincidentally enough, with our beloved Claire Foy and Jesse Buckley and Frances McDormand. So, I don't know, that's the tip of the iceberg, guys. That's just off the top of my head, but there's so much cool stuff coming. I'm excited to cover it all for you guys right here on Happy, Sad, Confused, and on the YouTube channel. What else can I mention? Well, we have, a bunch of live events coming up in New York, one that's officially on the books that you can purchase your tickets for now. And we have plenty of time to tout this because it's months away, but it's a rare opportunity when I can say there's an event months away. But get your tickets right now for October 25th. Ralph Macchio, yes, of Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid fame, is going to be my guest at Symphony Space, October 25th in New York City. Get your tickets now. The link to purchase tickets is in the show notes. You can also purchase virtual tickets to watch us live if you can't be there in person. But I'd love to see you guys in person because these live events are amazing. I've got some more stuff cooking with 92Y, some stuff cooking with Symphony Space. Many opportunities to come out and say hi in person to little old me, and I always love hearing from you guys. What else can I mention? We debuted a new Comedy Central episode of the Untitled Josh Horowitz Show with Kevin Hart and Mark Wahlberg the other day. That's on YouTube, on my social media, Joshua Horowitz on Twitter and Instagram. That was a blast. Maybe not so much for my clothing. You'll see if you watch. They kind of destroy me, but in the nicest possible way. What else should I mention? I think that's it, guys. There's a lot going on, but, you know, a little bit at a time, one step at a time, right? Today, front and center, let's give props to Natalie Emmanuel because it's a big moment for her to get to be front and center of your own feature film after being in a bunch of series and supporting characters in films, and I know she's very proud of the work. So come on out, support it. The invitation in theaters this Friday. And in the meantime, enjoy my chat with Natalie Emmanuel. Welcome to the podcast, Natalie Emmanuel, on this sweltering, insane day in New York City.
Thank you. I mean, I'm actually quite comfortably cool inside, but I haven't been outside yet. So I'm in my head, it's just nice and cool everywhere.
I been out
in my ignorance.
Stay where you are. I didn't realize you were doing press in town, or else we would have tried to make this work in person, but that's okay. It's another time. This is an amuse-bouche for our growing relationship. Congratulations on the new film. First, just give me some context, like you in New York. Have you spent a lot of time here? Are you shooting here now? Why are you here right now?
We're here doing press for the movie, promoting The Invitation. I'm not sure exactly why they chose New York. It might be because Thomas also lives here and it's like kind of a place between everyone's places, you know, London, LA, like I think it's like a good meeting place in the middle. I love New York. I love New York. Every time I come to New York, I'm like, I think I want to live in New York. And then the whole idea of just like not being up the road from my mom makes me really sad. And then I'm like, no, I can't do it. But, you know, it still might happen. Who knows? I might finally
know. One of these days. It's a long life. And you look, we've got it all. We've got, and if you, is London your home? Is London?
Yes, London's where I'm based. I grew up just outside of London in, about an hour and a half in Essex, in a little seaside town called Southend-on-Sea. That's where I grew up. And that's where my mum still is. I'm close to family very easily.
What was London or New York or any of the quote unquote big cities to you growing up? I mean, were you in London a lot as a kid?
Yeah, I mean, our family are from London. So I spend a lot of time in sort of Northeast London, Walthamstow, Leytonstone. That's where like all my cousins and my aunties lived and used to spend lots of summers there. And, you know, so it was really like, I obviously didn't grow up and go to school in London. And I think obviously that really shaped a person, but I feel like London was just like part of my landscape of my life. So it wasn't like a huge, like I'm moving to the big city.
And we'll get into your work life too. I mean, pretty early on, obviously you
you ended up there. So we'll get to that. But first, let's start on the new film, which I very much enjoyed. And it's an exciting opportunity for you, I'm sure. I mean, look, there's no dragons. There's no Vin Diesel to say, hey, you take the big, you know, load of press. It's on you, Natalie. This is your film.
I know.
How does it feel? Does it feel like a different kind of experience? I mean, there are two sides of it. There's the making of it, and then there's the promotion side of it, and they both have different responsibilities. Has it been, is this a responsibility that you've kind of like been chasing and have accepted?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I've always liked to challenge myself. I love what I do. I love storytelling. And I'm like, I have been building and like, gaining experience, learning, trying to just like building up to this moment. And I feel so just like, it feels really big. Like when you think about, you know, when I started as a little kid and like, then this, like we watched the screening last night and it was so crazy. It was like a lot of years like flashed before my eyes. And I was like thinking of all the people, all the, like knockbacks and the successes and the knockbacks again, and people that just like contributed to making this happen in the ways that they probably didn't even realize, and maybe I didn't even realize, you know. And so it's just so beautiful, and I just want to enjoy it and take it all in and just try to really like suppress my imposter syndrome. Just be like, Natalie, this is good.
It's okay. You've earned it. Yeah, I know.
You worked really hard. But there's always that moment when you're like, really? Is this my life? What has happened? So I'm so super proud of it. And it's just, you know, for a first kind of lead in a movie, I was so, so proud of the work that I did and the team that I had. I was so grateful for the team and the people involved, and Jess and Thomas. Like, it really was like, oh, okay, for your first kind of like vehicle that you're you know, driving and leading, it's like I couldn't have asked for a greater group and a lovely group. So I was just felt so proud of everyone. Like, it really wasn't just my success doing a lead, it was like there were so many people that made it happen. And then like the success of the shoot and the success of the film and what we made, like, is a group effort. Everyone like really held, we really had to hold each other up, and really did. And I felt that love and support, and you know, and I it was a really, I mean, it was a tough shoot, but we really would like, we've got,
you were in it together. I'm always curious talking to actors about like that experience of being number one on the call sheet, and like when you're not number one on the call sheet, looking to the person that's number one, who often sets the tone. And I've heard the good, the bad, and the ugly of that. And I'm sure you've had that in your career, of seeing people that set the right tenor, the wrong tenor. What have you learned from that? And what did you want to emulate?
I've been really lucky. I think I've been really lucky, actually. Like, you know, there's been some characters that I was, you know, less compatible with, is the nice way of putting it.
Right.
You know, and that's okay. Like, not everyone gets on, and that's okay. But I think for me, like, I am really, really sensitive to other people's kind of energy. And like, if I feel like there's strange energy in the group, or like if I feel someone's upset or not feeling hurt, like, it really upsets me. I have a really kind of intense sense of fairness, and like, I just want everyone to be excited to show up every day and feel, you know, looked after. And I think I just want everyone to feel how I would like to be treated and how I like the energy to be. But like, you know, not everybody needs the same things, and you have to also respect people's boundaries. And just, I think, you know, just making sure that you are aware of the individuals that you're working with, and making sure that they feel that they can come to you. I feel like if I've got an issue, and it's often so scary to go and say, oh, actually, is it okay if we do, you know, and it takes a lot of courage. And I think it's important for me to like have a rapport with people. I like to sort of spend one-on-one time with all of the actors I'm working with, just have a cup of tea, like, that's all, you know, just in prep, or let's grab lunch, let's grab dinner, you know, just, I want to, like, just connect with people. And because that's really what we're doing, we have to like build connections on camera, so why would we not offset? I mean, some actors don't need that, and I, you know, good for them, but I really love doing that because I love people. I like to connect and build a sort of family vibe so that everybody feels that they can say what they need. And, you know, not every kind of, I don't know, like thing that we would want to happen happens, but I just,
this is the nature. Yes.
You know, you could don't win every, you know, fight or battle or whatever, but the idea that you can't say, oh, it would really make me happy if,
yes,
or we could try to, you know, and I want everyone to feel that way. And I think that Jess really established an environment like that too. So I think that also really helps. And I think that's where we were in sync. And I think just us wanting that environment for the cast was really important. And, you know, they're all pros, like they're all just brilliant. And like, yeah, it was so great to play against. And I was like, this is lovely. Like, this is lovely.
Well, it is, it's funny, like what you're saying, Jobs, is what I've always like found on film or TV sets, which is that yin and the yang, which is like, it's this naturally very high pressure environment. Time is money. We got to move. Like every second counts. And yet it's all about, like, for the actors in particular, relaxing and just being open and being present. And it's like, and somehow finding that middle ground, right?
And I think just practical things I learned, that I've been learning just throughout my entire career, like, you know, I know the things that I need in order to do my job well, and not all of them are possible all the time, but you have to actively prioritize them. So, you know, like, I'm not very good on no sleep. I know that I'm not very good if I'm not taking care of myself, like with my food or like with exercise or like my mental health. Like, I have to look after all of these things and prioritize them. And I think, like, when I'm filming, sadly, like, I'm not the one that's like, hey, let's go to a, obviously we've been going through a pandemic, but like, I'm not the one that's like, let's go to a bar after work. I'm like, well, it is 10 p.m.
Bedtime, everybody, got to get my 10 hours.
Good morning.
Yeah.
And so I tend to like be, I'm a bit of a, like, you know, early bedtime person anyway. And I'm quite like homebody.
Yeah.
So that's just like my natural thing, but it's kind of is even more extreme when I'm filming. I'm like, okay.
Well, you know yourself by now. That shows maturity, Natalie, I think. Let's talk about some of the fun of this movie, which is both the genre of film and has some bigger, interesting themes. And this often is the case for these kind of like, quote unquote, vampire stories, these Dracula stories, which we've seen so many iterations of over the years. And I'm a sucker for them. And I did not mean that pun as I was saying it. I wanted to stop myself and I couldn't.
I love that you said it.
I hate myself for it. I didn't mean it. Trust me. Embrace it. What's your vampire bag? Like, were you like Bram Stoker's Dracula, Twilight, all of the above?
I love them. I think vampires are such a fascinating idea.
Yeah.
And they really just like make us confront all the sort of extremities of like the human experience. And that's why they're fun. You know, they're like sexy, they're violent. Like, we're all fascinated and curious about all these things. Immortality, power, like, it's like an accumulation of all these kind of things that you're like, all
forbidden kind of fruit. Yes. Yeah.
Have in us or want, you know? Yeah, and so I always was really into them. But we were doing press yesterday. The movie that came up a lot was like An Interview with a Vampire. Yep. I obviously love Bram Stoker. Like the sort of theatrical, like big set pieces of it. Like, it's brilliant. Yeah. And like, I also love this movie. And I feel like it was called 30 Days of Night.
Oh yeah. Yeah. David Slade directed it. I know it very well. Josh Hartnett.
It was less kind of sort of sexy vampire. It was like, we're like gonna kill you all. And it's like really like predators, like violent creatures just descending on a town. And I'm like, that is terrifying.
Yeah.
but amazing. And I always liked that film.
That's a good call. Ben Foster, I remember, was really good in that one. Yeah,
yeah,
good
stuff. Everyone's yeah. really strong. And I was saying yesterday on another podcast, I was like, I rewatched Jennifer's Body. I know she wasn't a vampire, but she was like a demon that ate people. So I was
close
like,
enough. Yeah, we'll allow it.
We'll allow it. And and I was just, and obviously it's like a very, it's a female written, female directed, female led, yes. like a monster, like movie really, isn't it? A demon, like a supernatural thriller, horror. And I loved it. I thought it was so funny and like brilliant and smart and before its time. And now it's like this, I didn't even realize it's like this cult classic.
Oh, it has.
People love it now. And I was like, I always loved it. So I was so happy to watch it again. And I was like, oh yeah, it really still holds up. And I just was excited because I love this idea of just, you know, it really kind of like talks about these themes of like, you know, exploitation and brutality and sexuality and, you know, and it has these same themes. And so I've always been like a fan of vampire movies. And also they always like are fabulous. Like the vampire is always like... got the threads, they've got the castle, it's like kind of, you know, amazing, like
it's a good visual. Gig yeah. Who helped shape your taste in film? I know you've talked a lot about how like close you were and are with your mom. Was she the primary kind of influence in your life in terms of film and TV or what?
I think that there was a lot of like weekends, like my mom used to work night shifts a lot, so she would go to work and then through the day, especially at the weekend, we'd be like just left like downstairs watching cartoons. And then like, well, when I was a kid there was only like 5 channels,
right?
If there were more we didn't add them, but there was about 5 channels, and it was like they would just be like Western movies and like these old movies that would just play all day on a Sunday and like Saturday afternoon. And I definitely used to see lots of films like through just watching TV, and like that would play on British TV, like in the daytime at the weekends. But also like, you know, the things that my friends were watching, and we all like, you know, had our boy crushes and they were doing in a film, you know, so it [S2] Right. [S1] Was definitely like just my friends. But I also just grew up like doing theater and performing arts, and so just the idea of like watching a story and you know, just loving storytelling was just a part of my kind yeah. of life from such a young age. And yeah, and my cousins always like got DVDs, and then they would like give us them, we'd like watch them on like a cycle, or not DVDs, it was VHS, sorry. Sorry, I forgot how old I was then. And then yeah, and so we'd get like the VHS like from our cousins. But I've always loved it. It was like various places I used to kind of indulge myself, but there was a lot of films that I actually wasn't allowed to watch because I was like, maybe my parents were like, I don't know if that's appropriate. And then I'd be at friends' houses where their mums are a bit more relaxed and
then watch the good stuff.
And then we'd watch it. Yeah. So,
Is that where your comfort movie comes into play? Because the movie you pre-selected to talk about today, which is a great choice, by the way, came out, I think, when you were probably only 11 years old, which seems yeah. a little young for a pretty sexy, romantic film, or maybe not. You tell
I actually watched it. Maybe I was a couple years older, maybe a few years older.
Yep.
And a friend of our family, she recommended it. And she said, oh, you should watch this film. And she was like, it's one of my favorite films, like you should watch it. And she said, it's, you know, it's just chemistry. That's the word. She was like, it's just chemistry. And I was like, you know, I'm like teenage girl, like peak teenage girl, right. like, oh my God, I want to watch a movie. And the thing as well was like, I had no idea what it was about. And I kind of just like pictured maybe like a sort of, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I didn't expect it to be like a female lead and a woman who's like pursuing basketball.
Let's tell the audience what it is before yeah. we've built it up, so the mystery so okay. much. It's Love and Basketball, which is of
Love
course
basketball.
From Gina Prince Bythewood, great filmmaker. This was her first film as a writer and director. Sanaa Lathan, Omar Epps, yeah. Alfre Woodard, great cast, came out in 2000. Sorry, take it away. I want to give a little context. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so I like love the fact that this woman, young woman, was like pursuing basketball, and you can sort of see like it's not something that is traditionally encouraged or necessarily pursued by young women. And you know, all of the sort of watching the guy that she grew up with and how different his experience was to hers. And I just felt so connected to this idea. I thought the movie was about him because I just assumed it would be.
That's what movies are. They're always about the guy.
He like meets a girl and then they fall in love and he's like the basketball star. That's right. Literally what I perceived it when she told me about it. And it was not that, and I feel like there was a reason she said you need to watch this, because it wasn't just about the kind of like chemistry of these two wonderful actors, it was, and this love story, it really was about, you know, a young woman defying all the odds and all the, you know, lack of belief in her, and you know, not feeling supported, and just I'm still pursuing and persevering, and in not just her sport, but in her love of her person. So I just loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And Sanaa Lathan, oh my God.
It's a great pick. And it's another movie, I feel like, Jennifer's Body, that's only grown in estimation over the years. People just keep coming back
to it. I watch it every so often. I mean, I've watched it so much that I've had to rebuy it because I like really just
wore it down.
DVD. It was like, this needs, nothing's playing on this, and I had to rebuy it, but I think it's such a great film, and it really is like, it takes me back to that time.
Yeah,
just being a teenage girl, I'm like wondering what my life is gonna be and what I wanted to do, and like, am I gonna have people tell me I can't do things? Well, of course I have, like, yeah. You know, young woman of color, like trying to be in this big old world, like I was like,
that's beautiful. I love all of that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Were you also, so like, I'm curious, you've ended up in so much, and this is not unique to you, but like many actors, a lot of genre stuff. We make a lot of genre stuff now, whether it's action films and fantasy films, sci-fi, etc. Were you into that stuff as a kid? Like, were you the Harry Potter kid? Were you into any of that or not?
I was a Harry Potter kid. I was. And I remember the first one of those coming out, and me and my friend, well, we watched it at her house, and I think we watched the first one, and then we just were like, should we watch it again?
Are you doing anything? I'm not. Let's watch it again.
Let's watch it again. We just basically rewound the VHS and pressed play. It was like, I loved it. I mean, I maybe fell out of them as I kind of got older, but yeah. I definitely rewatched them all recently, back to back, and that was really fun. And it was kind of incredible to see those actors grow and, you know, become who they became. And those stories were like, I was a big fan of them. And I had the books, and I was bought the books, and I like, yeah, they were fab. I also really liked like Never Ending Story. That was like amazing. What else did I like? I mean, I like the first Dark Crystal movie, like the Dark.
Yeah, and you ended up in the reboot. Yeah, yeah, that's amazing.
So cool, and I was like, I think that gives me some cool points.
Oh, definitely. Sure. Well, you're picking also films like those are like really arresting, visually. They take you to another world, like to like they're like fever dreams. Like they're just big swings. Yeah.
Yeah, and I also you know, one of my other favorite films, and like just one of my other favorite stories, I should say, is a kind of like Peter Pan sort of world as well. Because I always liked this idea of like, you know, pirates and fairies, and like, you know, I kind of was always into that story. And my sister used to, for me, she's like my Wendy, like in my life. She always, my big sister, we shared a bedroom. She used to tell me stories before bed, and like, used to make up stuff. She'd say, because her bed was by the window, and she'd go, oh, Natalie, so last night Peter Pan came to my window and he was flying. And I would be like, oh, really? She'd be like, yeah, I tried to wake you, but you were really, really sleepy. And so next time, like, she'd say it all the time, I'd be like, where did you go? And she'd be, and I believed, when I told you, I believed her for a long time. And so, yeah, Peter Pan was like, you know, that kind of just like other world, like this idea that this other world exists somewhere. And, you know, I loved it. I really did.
So when you end up in...
What am I talking about? I still love that story.
Yeah, of course, we all do, right? So when you end up in maybe not as sweet a world as the Peter Pan world, but Game of Thrones, when you end up on that set, in that environment... This was a show that was already going. You knew it wasn't. It was one of the things where you knew what you were getting into, and you. I know you chased it. You heard about it. When you finally started doing it, did it feel like I've arrived? Like this is a moment in my career. This is something I've been chasing, or what?
This was a game changer, and that is like not an understatement. I mean, I was a fan of the show. Yes, I kind of like annoyed my agent for a while about getting an audition. But I never actually thought that that was possible. You know, like they didn't, I mean, it's been spoken of widely how they didn't particularly cast people of color, like hugely in like kind of regular leading roles. So, you know, I was so like, this is mine when it like came, the opportunity came and I was like, oh my goodness. And then the sort of, it dawned on me that I actually had to do it now. In my like
the chase was everything. I go chasing it. Now wait, now I actually have to show up and do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was there were no words to describe how excited I was, how terrified I was. And I remember being at the first read-through and just sort of like standing terrified in a corner as like all the lead cast like, I'm like, oh my god, it's Catelyn Stark, oh my god. There's Sam Darley. Oh my God. You know, just being like a proper fangirl in the corner. And then actually it was Finn Jones, who I'd actually met on a previous job. He was like, Natalie, do you want me to find your seat? And I was like, in order to help you find your seat, I was like, just a bit terrified. It was amazing. But the thing that was so amazing about it was suddenly you're stepping into these worlds. Like you walk onto the set, you put on your costume and everything feels so real. And right. you're like, oh, I'm in it. I'm really in it. And it's mind blowing. I hadn't quite been around big kind of set pieces like that before.
Yeah.
Everything I had done before was very modern and like, you know, just in a pub, in a shop in someone's house. Like it was very like modern, like this very high concept stuff. And I realized, oh, this is like another level. Like this is a whole other dimension almost. Right. Like it was so worlds apart from what I knew. And but the first thing I noticed is like, as soon as they announced my casting, how passionate, hardcore the fans are. I mean, immediately I was like, because fantasy fans, I think specifically, they like live it. They yes. live it. And immediately they were like, oh, this is Amasande, and just like we're like just embraced
you in yeah
a beautiful way. And I hadn't necessarily experienced that before, and it was
and it's gonna last the rest of your life. You're gonna feel that that's always gonna be there, which is amazing. It's
so sweet. And you realize kind of like there's a real sort of art to making fantasy feel grounded and real and like, you know, not sort of. And that's what I think Game of Thrones did so well with the tonal nature of it. Like the sort of supernatural elements or the fantasy elements were really kind of were so well ingrained that you didn't actually like realize they were particularly
yes
supernatural.
It's also exciting to see, like, and you refer to this and you've talked about this a lot, obviously, like, yes, traditionally in fantasy, we don't see people of color, women of color in that world. And mm-hmm. progress was made. And I know there were a lot was made of the fact that your character died and the way she died, et cetera. And there's that narrative, but like, it struck me, I was just at Comic-Con, like familiar environs for you. And I talked to like the new Lord of the Rings cast, and it is the most diverse, multicultural, every like color, creed, everything. Yeah. And it's like how far we've come. Look, let's not pat ourselves on the back too much, but like a lot is changing, which is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we've come a long way, but there's obviously still work to do always. And also you have to like, someone made this analogy once about like, with this kind of thing, it's like, if you're in the ocean and if you don't keep treading water, you're going to be pulled away from shore. So you have to keep treading, you have to keep treading, unfortunately. That's sort of how I feel about that, conversation. But I was so proud of the fact that, you know, listen, I had a beautiful time on that show. They wrote me beautiful scenes and beautiful storyline. And I felt very just so lucky to have that part and play that part. I like thoroughly enjoyed being Masande of Narth. Like she was, it will always, I'm forever changed after playing that character. And I had such amazing people around me and other actors to learn from and work with and bond. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
But what I will say is that when it comes to that conversation is that I was really proud that it sparked, like her death sparked a wider conversation. And like, so then the things that come after it, people, it is in people's consciousness when they're making choices. Like I'm an actor, I get hired, like, you know, all these decisions are made just to even let me even audition for it, let alone anything. You know what I mean? Like there's all these decisions that are made. So like when the decisions are, you know, being made, that people are going, oh, we also need to bring voices that a diverse group of voices into those decision-making rooms. Yeah. And so that's all part of it. And I was very happy as much as I, you know, I understood. And I, it's funny because on one hand I was like, everyone dies on Game of Thrones. I was not expecting to still be here in season 8. So the fact that I was, and I finally happened, I was like, oh, there you go. That's my turn to die.
Right.
But then the sort of, I also understood and felt and knew the sort of significance of it. And I think the conversation that then came out of it was really important. And I was really proud that that happened. And I hope in some small way that contributed to that. Yeah,
so. I think it's safe to say it did, definitely. Another contribution we have to talk about is being a part of the Fast franchise, which I know Fast 10, I think, is still in production. It seems like,
production. I've rapped on it, but I think they're going for another, I don't know, like week or so, I think.
I mean, these productions are so unique in every respect, as you well know, just like the nature of it. And clearly, look, there have been difficulties in these productions and it's inherent in this kind of large scale filmmaking. But like on this go around, on the recent one, which had a change in director, I'm surprised. Yeah. Vin, why is Vin not directing by now? Have you talked to Vin about that?
I haven't actually. I mean, I haven't, but I think that he should be directing.
There's one more, right? There's still time.
He's done it before and it's been excellent. So, you know,
and
I don't know.
What can you say?
It's hard to act and direct.
No, I get it. Especially like that. Yeah.
That do it. I'm like, I don't even know how you're doing that. But
is this the case? Like, do you read the whole script of like Fast 10? Like, could, if I even asked you to, you could tell me what actually happens in the movie? Like, it's not one of those things. Okay.
No, I could tell you.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
But I won't. If I value my job, I would.
No, I get it. Can you say anything? Has there been any talk? Are you guys still talking about, like, we keep waiting for this, like, supposed, you know, the female-led ensemble spinoff movie. It comes up every press.
Wouldn't that be awesome? I've heard kind of whispers about it, but I've never heard anything particularly sort of
concrete about it.
Just concrete, sort of, And I think, like, maybe I'm just not, I've not been paying attention or something, or I don't know, like that's also very possible. But I haven't heard anything concrete. Okay. But I definitely, if I feel like there's like a positive sort of, when it has come up, people have sounded excited or positive about it. So I hope that would happen. It'll be really cool.
Is there anything you can say just in terms of, obviously the scale is huge, but for Fast 10, what struck you, just without revealing any too much, like about this story in particular?
I mean, yes, I think this story, we're so used to like these, I mean, there's a lot of action as always, there's big spectacle pieces, incredible, like high octane, like, you know, just ferocious kind of sequences. But I think what makes this movies different is that the stakes for the characters personally are much higher. It's one thing when it's like, oh, we're all on this unified mission,
right?
You know, stop this danger, right? Which is still kind of true, but the sort of the personal lives and the personal element, I think, of the the story, that stakes are much, much higher.
For gotcha.
And that's all I'm going to say.
No, that's fair. One other project I do want to mention. Are you in Coppola's next film? Are you doing Megalopolis?
Yes.
I'm obsessed with this. I'm very excited about this.
I mean, yeah, me too.
I literally first talked to Francis Ford Coppola 15 years ago about this movie. He's been trying to make it, as people might know, for decades.
Yeah.
Can you say anything about sort of like, I mean, I know Adam Driver's in it. There's a huge ensemble, Forest Whitaker, I think.
Yeah. I think Lawrence Fishburne as well. Yeah. And there were loads of people announced, but I don't want to say in case anything's changed, or I don't know. But.
Well, here's have you done the fabled Camp Coppola yet? Are you going to do that? Do you go to his estate and do the kind of a rehearsing kind of thing for this one?
Well, I believe that we do have a rehearsal period. So, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to work and do whatever this process. I'm really just... Yeah, it's it just feels so huge and exciting, and he's just obviously an actor, a director of a generation. He's one of the best to ever do it, and I'm so thrilled. I'm so thrilled because I just want to absorb every little morsel of all of it. And these actors, I mean, what? I cannot. I'm it's.
Did you do one? Because I've spoken to a bunch of actors over the years that have done read throughs, that have done table reads when he was kind of testing out the material. Were you at one of those with a table read or just an audition?
No,
or
what did you do? Well, I think when the sort of it's come around a couple times, and I think we met a few years ago initially, and we just met just as meet, and then that was oh my god. I remember just calling my mom, came out and I was okay, so my afternoon's been crazy, this is cool. And so that happened, and then it kind of went away for a while, and then I we talked again. It was just sort of over time, and then when it sort of got geared up again, we sort of zoomed. I was shooting The Invitation actually when it's all kind of actually materialize, and we had a really fun Zoom call, and just he's so smart and just brilliant, and we got on super well, and I was so excited, and I was this was great. Even if whatever happens, they might have so many people literally banging down the door to be in this movie, however this plays out, the fact that we just had this lovely phone call, and we played a game. It was fun and relaxed, and it was great. And I was I'm so happy to have had that. And I'm a happy woman. I'm great.
Well, and then, more to come. This is going to be an adventure. This is going to be awesome.
And so the fact that they were like, do you want to do this film? I was yeah, yes.
How often does Francis Ford Coppola direct a movie and direct a passion project? Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm so thrilled.
Last thing for you, because I know I need to let you go do a lot of more exciting, talking up your great new movie. Where are you at on the whole superhero thing? You're fan casted all the time for different roles, which is very flattering. I don't know if you see the fan art every year or two when they're she should be Storm or Catwoman, etc. Is that something foremost on your brain? Is that something that you still would crave or what?
I think that because I tend to want to do all kinds of things. I don't have there's definitely things that I want to do more of, more kind of dramatic roles for sure, or more indie film, or I want to get on stage at some point. I'm sort of open to all of it. And so I think playing a superhero is badass. I want to be a superhero. I think that's cool. Even if I just did it once and one scene where I get a cool outfit and a superpower, that's just fun. And you know, but yeah, I'd love to play a superhero. I'd love to do like a movie as
yeah. Is there one on your brain at this point, or are you just open to whatever comes down the road?
No, to be honest, I'm not the most kind of like in like comic book, like savvy person. My best friend though, he's always like, you should play this person. And I'm like, okay.
Sure.
Let me know. I'm sort of down to sort of throw my hat in the ring.
Right.
Always. But I just think it's fun. Like with sci-fi, with genre in general, you're allowed to like have conversations with your audience that are maybe harder to digest when they're not in a genre space. Yep. And I think Marvel's and like those big superhero movies, like they do that so well. And I kind of like the idea of like just donning a sort of amazing outfit and just having some supernatural powers and just
there you go.
Doing it like big, and it would be fun, like those big set pieces. And people that I've like worked with on met that have done those, they're like, they're tough, they're like the training, and I'd yeah. love the challenge of that and the physicality of it. I'm here for all of it. I'm here to try, like, and I like to do as much of it as I can, you know.
I think you can meet the challenge. Look, you've been doing this a while, but you're just getting started. A lot more exciting opportunities to come. Congratulations. A big moment. Look, you're leading your first, you know, feature film all yourself, The Invitation. Very happy for you. And look, as we said, some exciting things to come. Enjoy the Coppola experience. I can't wait to hear about it after the fact.
We'll definitely talk again.
Yeah. It's been great to connect today. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.